Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have a special guest, Chad Elledge. Chad graduated from the Texas A&M University in College Station, earning a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science. He also holds a Master of Business Administration degree from Texas A&M University in Commerce. Chad also graduated from the Southwestern Graduate School of Banking at Southern Methodist University with academic honors and a leadership distinction. He has had 25 years of banking experience and is currently the Chief Risk Officer at Texas Heritage National Bank, where he is responsible for the oversight of the bank's enterprise risk management system, the bank's compliance department, the information technology department, loan operation department, and several other special projects for the bank. Chad, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Chad, we're really excited to have you join us today because you've got a ton of experience right in the area of people we love to talk to. So we're really glad that you're here. We like to start out, though, by asking a question, just kind of get to know you a little bit better. And that question is, how did you get started in the banking industry? So this crazy financial sector, what got you started here?
It's actually pretty uneventful. I'd gotten a computer science degree, like you said, but I decided I didn't want to be a programmer. And I just happened to go into to a bank one of my buddies that worked at one day. I was talking to him and he asked me if I'd be interested in applying. He said that we need IT people, and talked to him a little bit about it. And next thing I know, I was working there. And so I had a great career, a great opportunity at Guaranty Bank and Trust, had a great experience, worked for some wonderful people there, and kind of got me hooked, to be honest with you.
So you started out in the IT section of the banking.
Yes, sir, I did. They wanted me to start at the bottom. So I started working on computers and running what we called back then POD, where you capture the checks to the system, just doing different things like that. And it kind of grew from there into working on policies. We went through Y2K, different things like that. And then more into the risk side of things, where the way it is now. So it was a great evolution, but I feel like now when I talk to people about it, I feel like I'm talking about the olden days versus the way things are now, you know, but that's how it started, basically.
So what got you to transition then from IT into more of the risk side of things?
Well, it was actually, it's kind of a funny story. At my last bank, our president actually had another opportunity, so he went to a different bank. Okay. And they bumped our COO up into the president spot. And I was already doing some special projects, but I really didn't have my hands around the compliance or the risk factor at that point. And so I went and talked to them several times, and they finally agreed to let me move up into, I was the chief administrative officer there. And okay. I was able to move into that position similar to what I'm doing now. And that's when I went to SWIGSBY and continued my education there.
Okay, that makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a perfect transition, because I know we talked about several different topics we wanted to chat about today. And the first one was actually cybersecurity. And we have a wide range of listeners. I mean, people that are involved in back office, people that are involved in more front office side of things. Would you mind giving me kind of a brief outline of what type of cybersecurity issues banks face today? How would you respond to them, or how banks should respond to them, and kind of the overall process regarding like incident management and cybersecurity?
Wow, that's a loaded question right there.
That's a loaded question.
A lot of to address the different types of risks that the bank has, you've got risks that start from inside the bank network, like ransomware and viruses and different things, phishing attacks and different things like that. Those originate from inside the bank. Then you've got your different risks that come from outside the bank, like a denial of service attack or different things where people are trying to hack your website or hack your routers. Those kind of originate from outside the bank. But to me, one of the biggest issues that we face today it's an employee training issue, because a lot of times you wouldn't have the phishing attacks or the ransomware if the employee had not clicked on the link or responded to the email in a way such that it allowed the virus to deploy on their computer. So in my opinion, employee education is very important.
So when you say that something originates inside of the system and everything like that, is that what you're talking about, where you have an employee that gets an email and they click on that link or they download the attachment or whatever?
Yes, sir. What will happen normally is there'll be an attachment that the employee will click on, and that'll launch what they call, it'll download a payload, they call, and that starts the attack. Even though the attacker's on the outside, this gives them a door to come into the bank's internal network, or they click on a link, different things like that will give the intruder a door into the bank's network that would not be opened if the employee had not clicked the link or responded positively to the email.
So what kind of policies should be, because I know you mentioned education and policies, what kind of policies and education should be in place to address this?
The biggest thing to me, the way I feel like security should be addressed, just like with your physical security and your branches, network security is really a layered approach, like an onion. Mm-hmm. And it starts with, you know, proper virus scanning, email scanning to get those emails out of the system so they're not presented to the customer. It comes in the form of employee meetings so that you're educating employees as to not to look for that, you know, the president's never going to email you an email asking you to click a link that your UPS package hadn't been delivered. They're never going to ask you your password mm-hmm. or sensitive information. The other part too is we send out phishing tests in our network that allow employees, kind of test them to make sure they're kind of on their toes, because we don't tell them when the test is happening. It actually occurs randomly for each employee. So there's different vendors you can utilize for that, but that kind of keeps people on their toes so that they're not on the lookout. They're always on the lookout for suspicious activity. So that helps a lot. But then, of course, your virus scanning on the PC helps, and different things like that. So each one of those goes together to really protect the employee and the bank as a whole.
Just a comprehensive package. So from the point that it hits the bank's servers or the bank's programs or whatever, all the way down the line to when the employee has access to it. That makes complete sense.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What do you do then, assuming that you've got an employee that clicks on a link and downloads something that they shouldn't have, and then you've got the attack happening on the bank's data or whatever. What then? What happens next?
So most banks will have what's called a business continuity plan, and that kind of gives the bank a roadmap of how they should respond. It's an internally developed document that tells them how to respond in the event. It goes anywhere from incident response down to a power outage, down to ice and severe weather, different types of scenarios. They can't obviously cover every scenario, but it does mm-hmm. give you a nice little roadmap. And typically embedded in that plan is an incident response plan. And the way that we have ours set up is, depending on how many people are involved in the incident, like let's say somebody downloads an attachment, but a virus scan catches it, that's not something that you're going to necessarily report to the FBI or your examiners. They're going to see that on your reporting. But if it's something that takes down the whole bank, a ransomware attack that takes down the whole bank or takes down a whole branch, then that's something obviously in the plan you're going to outline. You know, you go to your senior management, let them notify the regulatory body, then FBI, depending on how widespread the attack is. And there's different attacks that can happen. I mean, we've only got 20 minutes, so we really can't get into all of them, but just right. at a 30,000 foot view, that's pretty much what it would look like. The biggest thing that's important to consider too is having a nice open line of communication between executive management and the IT people, so that the IT people feel comfortable going and reporting that to senior management, because one of the biggest roadblocks I see is that they're, you know, IT people might be afraid they're going to get in trouble or afraid they didn't do something right. But if they try to hide it and cover it up or afraid to go to senior management, it can cause several other issues down the line. And that's what's important for senior management to realize, that they're there to support the employee and there to help, not to get onto them or fire them. Because it happens. Right. It's not something, it happens to everybody. It's not something that is necessarily limited to people that aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. So,
unfortunately, it's not a question of if these days, it's more a question of when these days.
It is. And how severe.
Yeah, absolutely. I had someone explain to me once that the lines of communication is by far like the most pinnacle and important element of it, simply because at that point the harm or the situation has already established itself. Like it's already there. And if you add another human element into that, where you're not having the proper report in and everything, then it takes a situation that's hard enough to begin with, and it just can exponentially complicate it.
Absolutely.
So one of the things, and I know that you've been responsible for this, so we're going to transition a little bit from cybersecurity, but stay on the technology theme here, is the using technology to your advantage. Because obviously there's a lot of risk that comes with using technology, but we do it because it's advantageous to us, right? So yeah, we have to worry about cybersecurity that comes with it, but we use technology to minimize cost or to provide additional services to customers. How do you use technology to minimize the bank's costs? I mean, I know some banks are rolling out ITMs. You've mentioned several other things. What do you do?
Our bank has leveraged a couple of different things. The first thing that we've implemented is implementing a voice over IP phone system that's cloud-based. Mm-hmm. And so it gives our bank the opportunity that our employees can put an app on their phone. It authenticates and it goes through the multi-factor authentication process, and jumps through the hoops it needs to jump through to allow the employee to put the phone app on their cellular device or their iPad. And it really frees up loan officers and different people that might need to go call on customers or be out of the bank. It gives them a great opportunity to have their phone with them even when they're not in the office. And the great thing about this as well is that most banks, including this one, that where we are now, we had several we call them legacy phone lines or POTS lines. Mm-hmm. It's just the regular old school phone lines you plug in and you get dial tone. And one of the things, like alarm companies all required one, the core software companies all required each one so they could dial into your systems back in the day. A lot of banks never canceled those lines. So you just, their phone bills just keep going up and up and up. And so when you leverage a system like a voice over IP, it gives you basically a clean slate where you can just cancel all your phone services. Your faxes can run through it. I can actually have one number that somebody can send a fax to, and it goes right to my mailbox. Mm-hmm. It really gives us a great opportunity, and we can allows us to move around a lot more inside and outside the bank. And so that's a great opportunity, and we had a tremendous cost savings from it as well. The other thing that our bank was able to do was we implemented what's called an SD-WAN project, which is software-defined WAN. And what that does is that you go from I guess most people know in the old days where we would have our main bank location and then the lines would go to each branch from the main bank location. So that's a great system for when it was is invaluable during its day. But now you've got different employees working in different branches. Now we've got staffing differences where depending on the job, somebody could work close to where they live and not necessarily have to drive to the headquarters. And it also provides the bank where you could just hook up your regular old cable modem to one of these routers. And in the event that it has a requirement that you get a little nicer internet connection, but you can have a cable modem connection or a cellular data connection as a backup. and it allows you redundancy. And it also allows, if you're outsourced to your core provider, it allows you a couple of different paths to get there in the event that your main location goes down. And that's one of the things that a lot of banks struggle with, is that if your main location goes down, it causes all your branches to go down. But in this model, even with a generator, you can still have fiber cuts and different things like that that can cause an issue. And this really protects about as well as any solution I've ever seen. And it's very cost prohibitive to do it. As long as you go through the telecom, like the AT&T's or the Spectrums, and we usually utilize a co-op. There's co-ops in some of our markets that we're able to utilize, but you've got to watch out for the resellers, because they know what's going on, so they pad their costs a little bit. So it's a great tool for us, and the speed is great at all the branches, and speed's great from home. It works great. It's a good option.
Perfect. And then you mentioned something about. I was going to say, you mentioned something about Core and kind of about like the reviewing of them as well. What are you looking at when you're doing that?
As far as our Core providers, what we were looking at from the Core, as far as doing different things you need to do on the Core, if you do that from different branches, you can do that from any one of the branches and you don't experience a slowdown. But one of the other things I was going to mention is that from a cost savings perspective, it's real important to manage your core provider contract, like your Fiservs, your CSIs, different vendors for that. And there's a lot of services out there that can help you renegotiate those contracts to make sure you get all the modules you need to be able to offer to your customers. That's one thing that that these service providers have gotten a little, since COVID, they use it as an excuse as to why they can't do things, but it's really important that you still get all the modules you can get, because you know they're going to go up on their price. And even if they don't provide you the level of service you need, they're still going to expect you to make your payment every month. So it's real important for the banks to hold the vendors accountable to that as well. And getting more modules for which you pay is a great way to leverage that cost as well.
That makes sense. So really just making sure you understand your relationship with the core or with your core provider and what you have access to with that relationship and taking full advantage of the products and services they're offering.
Right. And they'll give you a contract that's that big that, I mean, even being a lawyer, it's gonna take you a while to go through it. And they like to use the term usual and customary charges. So those are things, and auto renewing and coterminous agreements, those are different things that's really important to kind of have ironed out at signing, because those are things that make it really hard. If you ever want to go away from a core provider, it makes it really difficult for you to do that as a bank.
Yeah. Yeah. They like to bring you in with the contract and keep you there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, there's one other topic I wanted to talk to you about just while we have time. You actually went to graduate school of banking, which is not something we see from everyone. I mean, I feel like education in banking is kind of downplayed a little bit, or maybe downplayed more than it should be. So what value do you see or did you receive from your education, and what value do you see in education focused on banking?
That's actually dual benefit for me. One of the things that it allowed me to do is, as I started branching out of the IT sector, as I started doing that, it gave me a lot broader education as the bank as a whole, balance sheet management, some different things that I'm doing now that I was not doing before. A lot of analysis from the bank perspective, so I'm able to help my CEO a lot more in those areas. But to me, the biggest thing that it helps you do is it helps you build your network. And that's something that I cannot tell you how valuable that tool has been for me, because even from an IT perspective do you know somebody that might be doing this in their bank, or somebody that knows about this? There's hundreds of people that I could communicate with right now that would be able to answer that for me or tell me the best way to do that because they've already implemented it, or they're a little bit more specialized in that area. And that's one of the things that, your network does. But one of the greatest things that I found as well is when you get involved in these different groups you're in, it doesn't have to be banking school. There's a lot of different, the banking organizations, we're a member of TBA and a member of IBAT. TBA does a great job of having different venues and different areas where you can communicate. They have HR huddles, they have compliance huddles. They have what we call a tech talk, and there's a bunch of IT and risk people that they get together. We're getting together next week to go through and talk about current issues. And, you know, even though we might be in competition, all the IT guys are all friends because they've either worked together at some point or they know each other. And so it's a great resource to build your network. But the other thing that it really does is the more friends and the more colleagues that you get out of your network, they tend to build you up and build your confidence level up. And that was one of the things that I learned going through banking school. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll be okay. I can do some of this stuff. But you quickly learn you're drinking from a fire hose when you go to one of those programs because there's just so much information. But the great thing is if you leverage your time there and use your time wisely, you'll get to know several people from different areas and they will. I went 5 years ago, I think, is when I graduated, and I was the oldest guy there for sure. But definitely, I can call. There's 10 people that I could send a group text to right now, and if I needed them for anything, professional, personal, anything, they would be here as quickly as they could drive here.
That's awesome.
They're invaluable to you personally and professionally. I just can't say enough good about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that network, I think, is utmost importance. And I think that obtaining that when you go into banking school is one of the top elements. But what about if you can't? What if you don't have the ability to go to a formal education or a formal, like, time, money, you name it? What kind of resources should a bank be providing, or should bank employees be looking for?
Well, I think if you're a bank employee, I think one of the things that you should start doing is you should start looking at your trade organization, your banking association, whether it be a TBA or an IBAT. There's different types of programs that you can get involved in, anything from leadership down to, like I said, an IT huddle or an IT tech talk or a HR huddle, compliance huddle. There's meetings going on within an hour of our bank constantly. And if those meetings are not happening, then there's usually a ton of webinars, different options you can do. Our core platform, CSI, offers a ton of great training and documentation that you can take advantage of, that I would definitely start there and start learning all you can. And it's a great platform for you to expand your territory, so to speak, because it teaches you the ins and outs of the system, teaches you the ins and outs of the regs. And there's, if you just put your, you know, feelers out there, send a few emails, you'll find out there's more training than you can ever have time to watch. And most of it's free. I mean, Bankers Online, there's just several different resources to take advantage of that have been great for me over the years.
So really you're saying just take advantage of the resources that your bank has access to, be it through a paid program that your bank has, online resources, your core provider, or really just use your eyes and look around, because there's a substantial amount of training out there. Is that what you're getting at?
I would actually even say one of the things that I would actually throw out there is that if you're not taking advantage of these free resources and different things you can do, even from taking college classes. I was fortunate enough that Guaranty paid for me to go back to school to get my master's. Very fortunate, very blessed to have that option. But a lot of people don't have that. But until you're using all of the free resources at your fingertips, you're going to find that your bank is not going to be willing to invest in you. They're going to be more willing to invest in you when you're willing to dig and do the work. And that's the thing I've found over the years.
That's perfect. Well, Chad, unfortunately, we are running out of time here, but I did want to give you the chance that that if you could give one piece of advice to banks in the industry today, what piece of advice have you learned throughout your career? What piece of advice would you give?
Well, that's a tough one too. The biggest thing I would advise a bank to do is to not look at IT as a black box or an unknown, and don't treat your IT people as I'm just going to pay and take care of this problem. You really need to cultivate a relationship with them and develop reporting mechanisms and different things, and spend the money for the penetration tests and the external. I know most of the regulators require this now, but everybody knows that there's different levels of exams you can, and audits you can get for IT. And I think spending the money to get a great one, it really is just giving your, you know, it's one thing if you get hacked and you're using an A-level audit firm to do your assessments and your vulnerability right. assessments and your pen tests. But, you know, if you're skimping on this and doing it every 18 months and kind of pushing it out, and I'm going to try and skate by doing this, and you get hacked, that's kind of on the bank at that point. And that's the way my management, my CEO sees it, the same way our board of directors is in full support of anything that we come to them. And I think that, I know it's hard for them sometimes because a lot of them don't know anything about IT. And so it's really hard for people to get their hands around a lot of it. But really, if you just utilize the IT people, really want to have a voice and be heard. And that's the biggest thing that I've seen over the years, is banks that are able to leverage their IT people to show them how they can use technology to make their jobs easier and help the bank, that 9 out of 10 IT people are going to try and do that. And so I think it's important for the bank management to capitalize on that resource.
You get what you put into it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I love that. Well, Chad, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and we're really grateful that you were able to join us for today's episode. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
For the rest of you listening, thanks for tuning in. And that's Banking Matters.